Good morning, friends. My name is Virginia, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you so much. What an honor and what a privilege to be here. Thank you, Kendra. And I'm like Joe. If I was into women, I would be into you. You've been so amazing. You're so amazing. You fall in love with Kendra. She has this southern spirit, just vivacious and warm and inviting, and you just want to go to her house and sit at her table and eat apple pie. You know, it's, I don't know, I just love you, love you, love you, and thank you to the San Fernando AA Convention. It's like another world for us because we live in Downey, and this is like another country. And then we have LA, and then we have Orange County. So maybe one of these days that three countries can merge. I love the energy here, the loving, high energy vibratory force that you can feel. It's so amazing. And I was, thank you to all the marathon groups. This is done by one speck. I heard one of the speakers at the marathon says, we're just one speck of organic matter. But each one of us goes home and sits in the kitchen or in the living room and work the steps one-on-one, and we bring this light. Then we come into this group, our home group, and we create a big, greater light. And we come into a convention, a lot of us, we create an incredible amount of light. And but it's all because of all the work that is done in kitchens and in living rooms that we're able to have that beautiful intimacy that Joe was talking about. And I know he couldn't get out of his mind the visual of Nancy posing nude. Like, and I've been obsessed since last night about the visual of him pooping. I was like, really, Joe? Really? Oh, my God. And thank you to my Latin family. Woo! Hola, familia. Thank you for the dancing, and the skit was amazing. After the skit, I could have gone home. I was like, that's it. And the singing, if you didn't feel God in the skit, in the singing, or in Herb's talk, or in the speaker meetings, or in the marathon meetings, it has been a convention for all types of learning modes. If you feel God through music, you got it. If you feel God through dancing, you got it. If you feel God through the intellectual academic talk, we got it too. And I want to talk about Herb K. I think we should just do one convention with just a workshop with him. I mean, he was amazing. And he opened his talk with, can you right now name the cause of your suffering? What are you suffering from right now? And what is the source of that suffering? I said, dear God, it's 9 a.m. But as soon as I wrote that question, immediately, I could, all of this, I was suffering, yeah, because I'm a sufferer. Thank you so much. Each speck of organic matter that's here, I was a useless speck of organic matter, and you have turned me into a useful human being. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. And for that newcomer, all the newcomers, welcome home. We hope you're done. We hope you're done. We don't know if you're done. It's a battle between you and your disease, and we don't know who's gonna win. And you're gonna fight with everything you have for your life. So I was so delighted that my sponsor was the opening speaker. And then by coincidence, I was the closing speaker. And she says she's in the remedial bus and the advanced speakers would speak after her. Well, she's the driver of my bus. So. And whenever I think I'm a little bit advanced, she's like, go to the back of the bus, Virginia. So So she tells us that we're in this yellow, little yellow bus, and we will never be able to get out off of it. Because I will never be cured of alcoholism. What I have is a daily reprieve contingent on the spiritual maintenance. I could drink tomorrow. No matter how long you have, it doesn't matter. We've seen people drink with 30 years, 35 years. It doesn't matter. If I'm working today, I got up this morning, I got on my knees, I prayed. I usually go to, to a 7 a.m. meeting online that we started during COVID, and there's like 20 of us. People from Montana, Pennsylvania, and that's the way I started my day. I woke up, I logged in, and they were like, turn your camera on, Virginia. I said, I can't, I'm in the shower. But I didn't want to miss it. I needed to connect to not get, let my big ego said, no, I can't, I don't have time today for my what keeps me sober. And I got on my knees and I prayed and I wrote a little bit about, last night I met with my sponsor and I said, I have a couple of things, just 10 minutes, and everything that was blocking myself from God, I shared about it, we talked about it, and it was lovely, it's been lovely. I was born in a Hispanic family, and I love what Joe said. What was I like? What am I like today? What happened and what am I like today? Thank you, Joe. Thank you. My gaydar was not on with Joe. I was like, why can't I connect with Joe and charm him like, hi, papi? And it didn't work till he got up yesterday. I was like, oh, man. Anyways, I fell in love with Joe, and thank you so much. So I come from a Hispanic family. I grew up in Mexico in a little town. It's in the middle of nowhere. And we lived in and the floors were made out, were dirt. We all slept in one bedroom. Incredibly poor, but I didn't know I was poor. We lived in front of the river, and I have 9 siblings. And we would just be out playing all day in the river, running around on the donkeys. We have a donkey called El Canelo. We would just ride the donkey all around the corral and play with the chickens, and it was just beautiful. And my mom decided to come to this country when I was probably 2 years old. She would wake up every morning and sing, and it was like, I was in heaven, and I didn't know I was poor, and I didn't know I was Hispanic, and I didn't, nothing. I didn't know nothing. I was happy. And my mom came to this country because we were really, really poor, and my father was an raging alcoholic. So they decided to come here because my older sister was really sick, and they took her to the doctor. They knocked on the door, and the doctor said, do you have money? And he said, no, we don't. And he said, come back when you have money. So it was 2 o'clock in the morning. They went and knocked on their compadre's house, and they said, do you have money? And the compadre said, here's 40 pesos so you could take your child to the doctor. They went to the doctor, and the doctor opened the door, and he was drunk. And he said, Do you have the money? She said, yeah, we have money. Can you see our child? He just took the money, put his hand on her forehead, and through the door just gave my mom and my dad medicine. They went back home, and my sister died the following day. And my mom said, I will never, ever, ever let money get in the way of my children's lives. And so she came to this country following my dad, and I was left behind, and the sun went off, and everything turned to darkness. And I was left behind with my grandma and my grandpa, and we were all left behind. So I lived with my grandma for the next, on and off, for about 20 years, 23 years. She was incredibly religious, really rigid. That was her love language. She was clean, she cooked for us, and She was a beautiful woman, but she was really religious. And she had this beautiful painting that she thought it was beautiful. And there was all the drunks and all the prostitutes and everybody was going to hell. And there was another that all the nuns and all the priests and all the pious people were going to heaven. And I was 3 years old and said, I'm going to hell. I knew it looked so fun. They looked like Nancy. And I was like, that's it. I'm there. I'm 3 years old, right? And so my mom sent us to Catholic school. They put all of us through college. We have never, everything that we've asked for, my parents, my poor, the farmers, and really poor, they were able to put all their children through college. And now they own this beautiful estate in central part of Mexico, and it's an international wedding venue. It's 500 years old. I was born, now they're the bosses, you know, they're the landlords. And my mom has worked like a maniac all her life, from 4 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night. She has been this incredible force. She wasn't present, but she has been an economic. That was her love language, was let me provide for you, because your father cannot, but I will. So I come from then I start seeing that all my sisters are prettier. All my neighbors have a better life. Everybody around me is better than I am. And I have this incredible feeling of I don't belong. This is weird. And life starts hurting. And the way you look at me, I have this incredible sensitivity to life that is just so intense. I compare my alcoholism to, I know there's no comparison, but when autistic children have this oversensitivity to sound, I have this oversensitivity to feelings. And it hurts. Living hurts. And every moment that I'm awake, it freaking hurts. And it just, I cannot do life. And the first thing that I found, my first drug of choice was books. I found books and I could escape. And I wasn't present. Anything that takes me out, I'm out. And anything that gives me pleasure, I'm in. I love pleasure. I love my instincts to no avail. I mean, I'll die for my instincts. That's what the big book says, and I understood that. So I was, with all those feelings, that my first drug of choice was attention. Then the second drug of choice was escaping through books. And so I was coming back and forth between Mexico and here. So English is my second language. So I have a lot of idioms that I don't understand in English. And the other day I told my husband, are you pulling my balls? And he's a second generation Norwegian or third generation, born and raised in California. He said, do you mean pulling my chain? You understand what I said? Do you understood it? And he just laughs now. And we all have all my sisters, we have the same thing. We say, do you have your chickens in a line? Do you mean your ducks in a row? I try my best. We're like Gloria, right? In Modern Family. And so I have all these feelings and I have all these emotions and I do not know how to do life. And I go back to Mexico again. I go back and forth. And there's my grandma. And my friends invite me to their house and they take out a bottle of Bacardi. And they take it. It's only three of us. Oh my God, I picture that day. And they start serving it. And I start drinking it. And I'm good. And all the fear goes away, and all that sense of oversensitivity just falls from me, and I'm good. And I just fall in love completely and absolutely. And I don't want to kill myself anymore, and I belong. And that barrier that blocked me from here to there, the doors open, and I could walk into life. Hello, and I'm here, and I'm going to make it. And I'm like Bill W. I'm going to climb, and I'm going to fix myself, and I'm going to be at the top of the world, and I'm going to make it. Because now I have the tool, and I love alcohol. Alcohol is my savior. Alcohol is my everything, my lover, my friend, everything. It heals me all the time, and I will give up my life. It's an abusive partner. It's a toxic partner, but I cannot leave alcohol. And once I discover alcohol, I'm in. I was 13 years old. I said, well, you know what? And I made a plan for my life. If I become a psychologist, I will fix myself, and I will do this, and I will do that. And I start becoming the most popular girl in school, and I have a band of boys that follow me. And I don't hang out with girls. I only hang out with boys. Hello, Bobby. I have girlfriends, but they have to be as crazy as I am. And they have to drink as much as I am, and they cannot compete with me. Sometimes we'll share boyfriends, sometimes. But I do like to take your husbands and your... You have to share with me, I don't have to share with you. So I start drinking, and I make all these plans, and I go to school, and I do become a psychologist. That wasn't it. Oh, well, maybe if I marry him, he's tall, he's beautiful, he doesn't drink. I don't love him, but he can fix me. I don't care about anybody or anybody else. I want to fix what's wrong with me. And I want to use you, and I want to eat you and spit you out, and when I'm done with you, I'm going to move on. So I marry this beautiful dentist. He has this beautiful practice in Mexico. And I'm crazy by now. I'm traveling to Colombia for 1 month on a motorcycle, and I'm with a backpack, and I'm drinking, and I'm going to Europe in a backpack and drinking. And I said, I have to fix myself. So I marry this guy, and I bring him to this country. I said, I married him, and I'm like, that wasn't it. So what's next? So maybe I need to move to the United States. So I come back over here. And I bring my husband. He's a dentist. He's a respected, beautiful human being. But I don't care. And I bring him here, and he starts working in a bakery overnight. He has never, ever recovered. Has been 37 years. Now he makes signs for a company, and I destroyed this man's life. I don't care. I do not care. He doesn't drink. He's going to fix me. He has to take care of me. And that wasn't it. So I said, maybe if I have the beautiful job. So I start working for a Catholic Archdiocese of Los Angeles, and I'm on TV, and I'm giving interviews, and I have employees, and I'm only 25 years old, and I'm on top of the world. But at night, when the hole comes back, alcohol is there. Because I'm climbing, and that wasn't it. I said, maybe if I have children. I don't want to have children because I want to be a beautiful mom, caring, nurturing. I want to have kids so they could fix me because I'm selfish and self-centered to the core. And I'm going to use you and spit you out, and I don't care what I have to do to fix me. And I have my beautiful girl. She's absolutely stunning, gorgeous, precious. She fixes me for about a week. That's it. Maybe if I have a beautiful house, that will fix me. So I have my husband build me a beautiful house in Mexico, and I have the maid, and I have the kid. That wasn't it. By that time, I'm declining. I've tried everything. Money, property, prestige, and it doesn't work. Alcohol is the only thing that saves me. Once I start drinking, I cannot stop. But it's my lover, my friend, my everything, and you can take it's a rapacious creditor that bleeds me of all self-esteem and all will to resist its demands. and just take me, to, but continue to heal me and give me that. So at the end of my drinking, man, I'm living in a little bedroom, one-bedroom apartment in L.A., in the city of Bell. And I don't remember that I'm a psychologist. I don't remember that nothing. I forgot. And I can't leave my house. And I can't get out of my house. And I can't take care of my children. And I'm putting on a bathroom in the bathrobe in the morning. And I said, today I'm going to play with my children. Today I'm going to be a mother. Today I'm going to cook for my husband. And I'm going to do the laundry. And it's 6 p.m. and he arrives and the children are in diapers. They're eating cereal and I'm sitting on the couch. And I can't do life anymore. This is the last. I'm done. I can't leave the house. I'm terrified of leaving the house. I can go to the 99-cent store, and every night at the 99-cent store, I feel like it's the sensitivity to life that's so freaking painful. My husband has to do everything. I'm a child. I'm useless. So I go to I drank probably 24 beers, bottle of tequila. I am drunk, swaying, but I'm sober. And my head does not shut up. Bitch. They're looking at you. You're useless. They know who you are. And I can see the judgment, and I could feel the fear, and I could feel the envy, and I could feel the jealousy, and I could feel everything. Everything that I had been running away all these years, it just comes, and I cannot escape it. I cannot. The next day, I wake up naked in the hall of my little apartment. My husband is done. He doesn't even care about covering me. He's done. So I call Alcoholics Anonymous, and not because I wanted to be good, not because I didn't know I had a disease. I always thought I was a bad, mean person. I called you because alcohol stopped working. My lover left me. Where do you go? I have heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been here prior to that for 9 months, and it worked, so I'll give it a try. And I came to you, and I was a savage, and I was hiding under the desk, and you would take me to your homes, and I would go and hide under the kitchen table like an animal. I was terrified, and I couldn't leave the house. And my sponsor, Nancy Cook, would tell me, just go get the newspaper. I said, no, I don't want a job. I can't. Say, just go get the newspaper. Don't open it. She was the most beautiful. She's the best for newcomers. She has an incredible gift for newcomers and old timers and in betweeners and all of us. And so I just got the newspaper, and somebody knocked on my door the following day, said, and they had a pharmacy right next, because I couldn't leave the house. I was terrified. I could not leave the house. Fear had overtaken my life. I heard a knock on the door, and the guy said, in the next door said, listen, we need somebody to handle the bills. It's a shift from 7 p.m. to 12 p.m. Can you do it? It was the grace of God just coming, by being willing. Just be willing to follow directions. Be willing to say, hear other AAs that have been here for a while. Work the steps, clean house, trust in God. So I started working the steps, and the universe just started taking me. It was like there's an incredible, loving, vibratory force that starts taking over. If I surrender and I open up, as alcohol took over, now this is incredible force that's going to take over. And I just let it go. And okay, let's go. I don't know where I'm going, but let's go, right? So I remember that I had a degree, and they told me, why don't you reevaluate your credentials as a psychologist? And I sent it to the International Board of Evaluations, came back as a bachelor in educational psychology, and then somebody told me, why don't you go and take the CBIST? I go and take the CBIST, and at this point, I'm just doing whatever you tell me to do, and all the feelings that I have is a lot of hatred. I only feel hatred. I resent everything and everyone walking on the planet. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I hated dogs, I hated cats, I hated whites, I hated Hispanics, I hated Asian, I hated everything and everyone. No one could do nothing. I mean, everything. Everything was this blur of hatred, this incredible amount of fear, and this obsession, this lust that I couldn't quench. So I came to you, and then you told me to just surrender. And I reevaluated my credentials, and you told me to take the CBIST. I took it, and you said, somebody told me, why don't you go and apply for a job at the district? I don't like kids. I hate kids. And what has my journey in AA has been everything that I used to hate, I have been in deep contact and learned to love. So I went to the principal's office. They interviewed me and said, have you ever taught? No. Have you ever been in a classroom? No. Okay, you got a job. And I walked in, and I was like, during recess, I would get on my knees and pray, and I would cry. And I would just walk around with the book, like pretending that I knew what I, pretending. And little by little, and I would tell the kids, this is what you're doing. And I was in charge, and I was in control, and I was in command. And that relationship has just shifted so incredibly beautifully. Today, when I go into the classroom, I said, will you allow me to teach you? Can I have your permission? Can we work together? And when we have an issue, let's go to the circle, boys and girls. What's your part? Can you make amends? And now they all know, I need to make amends. During recess, I didn't play fairly. That's the A working for you. Little specks of organic matter bringing the light in third grade. I used to hate gays. And one of my sponsors came and she said, can you please sponsor me? I said, I'm not a lesbian, my friend. I did some, but... I did try it when I was drinking, but... And she said, I don't have a problem being a lesbian. I have a problem with alcoholism. Take that. My son came out when he was 13 at the Museum of Tolerance. And I hugged him and I said, oh, I knew that, baby. I love you, I adore you. Can you be an elegant gay? Can you not be a flamboyant gay? So he went to Berkeley and he started dressing in drag. Baby, I told you, remember what we talked about? I gave you permission. But you need to be an elegant gay. And he said, you only love yourself. You don't really love me. You love the image. You don't love me. You can't see me. You love your judgment more than you love me. My children have been the greatest teachers. And I want to make amends to the LGBTQ community. Because of my heterosexual privilege, I thought I had the right to tell you that you could be. Who am I? My healing from hatred to love has been profound. It's not right here at the level. No, it's really deep. My son came to me about 6 years ago, and he said, I'm so tired of living out of a box under my bed. I'm so tired, Mom. I need to transition. And I got up, and I hugged her, and I said, let's do it together, baby. And I'm so, so incredibly, I just was bawling because she had lived alone for so long. Not being who she is. And we've transitioned together. She's a beautiful woman. She's engaged. Thank you. Thank you, AA. In sobriety, I have not been well. I have not been the poster child for AA. The first 15 years, I was in lust over and over and over and over and over and over again. I fell in lust. I within 5 years of my first years of my marriage, I betrayed my husband, and I had destroyed that man. I would betray him when I was drinking. When I got sober with the first 5 years, I betrayed him once, and this man was, oh my God. And I left him when I was 5 years sober, and I just went after him, and I became obsessed with him. And I got obsessed with the internet. I would bring them from Chile or from Colombia or from Spain. And once they got here, you're mine, papi. I couldn't see men. I couldn't honor men. I could not see that you want the same thing that I do, that you're sacred and precious, that you're afraid, and that you have an incredible soul searching. I couldn't see you. I only wanted this tall, muscular. I only saw the outside of you. I never saw you, never saw your soul. And for that, I am so sorry. I used you, I spit you, and I kicked you to the curb, and I just abused you. And I'm so sorry. My ex-husband didn't forgive me until 2 years ago. Well, maybe he's still forgiving me. Just recently, it took him a long, long time. I went to make amends to his mother and all his family for telling the whole town that she was a whore. Everything that I was, I said that she was. So I had to face all 10 children and make amends to each and every single one of them. I said, will you please forgive me? And they said, go fuck yourself. And I had to. And some of them said, no, it's okay. It's all right. We understand. My children just flew in yesterday from New York and Washington, D.C., my two girls, and they said, can we go? My ex-husband's father passed away this week. He went to the funeral, so they went to be with him. They came to be with him. When my children are with, I only want them for me. I don't want to share them with him. And I made the point to fly them in, pay for their tickets, well, half of it, honesty. Let them get my car, go get their dad, be with their dad. If they have time to, I'll meet them wherever they're at. That's part of my living amends to them. So I fell in lust over and over and over again. I didn't heal from that till like 11 years, 9 months, and I don't know how many days. There was this beautiful man that I met. He had been in the circle for over 20 years. And he was way bigger than I like them, or my. And I saw him. I really saw his beautiful heart, his beautiful body, his mind, his soul. And I've been healed from that for the last 11 years. I have not fallen in lust. I have to be careful because I could fall into emotional affairs in sobriety, where I'm not faithful to my partner because I find you so incredibly funny and brilliant, you know? So I need to be careful, and I have to keep myself in check to be faithful and honor my husband, because I have everything I need with him, everything. So thank you so much for healing that part of my life. And in sobriety, I was 20 years sober, and my sponsor gave me this beautiful party to celebrate. And we do skits. And they did this beautiful skit about me and my children and how I obsessed I was over the internet and pulling all these men from all over the world. And it was funny. But sometimes in my share, I used to share that when I came to you, I didn't feel anything, that I hated everything and everyone. And when it was the skit, they said that I hated my children, and it was everybody. I wasn't like selective in my hatred. I hated everything. And there was a part of the skit that was really painful for my children, and my children were bawling and bawling. They were so hurt, and I got a resentment. I got a resentment with my home group, and I said, it's my sponsor's fault. And for 3 years, I made my sponsor suffer. And I would talk shit about her, and I would walk around. I said, you know what she did? And it was justified. And I don't know, my sponsor doesn't leave. Not only does she not leave her husband, she doesn't leave her sponsees until we work it out. So if you're going to leave, you're going to leave with your head high, and it's going to be a healed relationship. It's going to be not with hatred, not with resentment, but because we're done. And I thank you, Nancy. Thank you for not leaving. My part was that I didn't know how to forgive. I held to the power of forgiveness, and I didn't want to give it away. And had I ran away from that relationship, I wouldn't have learned that I do not know how to forgive. And you taught me that. So thank you for staying. And then right now, I'm learning the lesson of my best friend had a stroke about 6 years ago. And we were like so great. I mean, we were like amazing together. I would go to all her parties. She would come to all my parties. And we would list the same arrogance. She had the same arrogance as I did. My sponsor says that you oozed arrogance, Virginia. And I found my buddy, you know, and she had a stroke 6 years ago. And she was in the emergency room, and they didn't even know if she was going to make it. They let everybody in because they thought she was a goner. And I sat next to her, and she came out, and she's recovering, and she survived. And she's an incredible fighter. I asked for permission to share, and she said yes. She was a news reporter for Univision, and she's a doctor in psychology. She's a brilliant woman, and to see her like that, I could not accept it. And I've struggled, and I said, how can people that suffer, that have handicaps in AA. I'm learning that lesson. I don't feel that I'm truly done, but it's my lack of acceptance. She tells me, the most painful part about this, Virginia, is that I know I'm handicapped. I know that I'll never be the other who I used to be. The most painful part is that people around me do not accept me exactly how I am today. She doesn't remember how she used to be. I remember, so I want her to come and be that. It's like when my child transitioned, you feel like the dead of a boy, and you have to embrace your girl, and you have to let go of the boy. So this is where I'm at right now, and I've made amends, and she's here with me this weekend. And I can't thank you enough, Rosa Maria,
from the bottom of my heart for being tolerant of my intolerance. I'm still learning, and I want to be the best friend to this new us that we are. And that's all we have to do, right? One day at a time. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we have is a daily review, an incredible opportunity to bring an amazing amount of light into this planet. We could either bring darkness or we could bring light. We make the decision day in, day out. Bill W. used to call us the children of the dark. I love it, because I'm a degenerate. I love my instincts. Anything that produces me pleasure, I'm in. And I mean, if you give me a box of Oreos, I don't eat one. I turn on Netflix, I don't watch one episode. The stop button doesn't work in me. And I accepted my condition. Once I accepted, like Herb Kay said, we either accept the flow into reality or we continue to block it. And that's what causes the disturbance. You know, either we flow or nope, I want it my way. So Herb, I can't thank you enough. And every single one of you, the men's stag, we want to go to your group, right? Right, sponsor? My sponsor was like, let's go to that group. The Pacoima group, Angelica, our fifth, San Fernando. Angelica, 50-year-old wonder, she's in love with us. In love with AA. Welcome home, baby girl, and welcome to all of our newcomers. You're in for the ride of your life. Thank you so much for allowing me to share.